kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is another reviews episode, and we've got a bunch of games to talk about, starting things off the way we usually do. Pernell Vaughn's here. Pernell, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Prepping for some travel time and cleaning the home and eating dinner. I'm chasing a lot of bees, and those bastards sting. It's not pleasant, but I'm getting things done, you know? All in all, it's that good busy, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's not busy because I don't want to do something. It's busy because it's a lot I want to do.
Which is a good way to be, to have, you know, shit that you want to do ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
So what kind of fun stuff do you have on the plate? Where are you traveling to?
I'm going to Orlando.
Oh.
The downside, of course, is it's by car. So it's going to be a while. The Switch doesn't have a battery life for that trip. My goal is to bring a bunch of game consoles and just switch between them. Though what ends up usually happening is I get everything ready to go and I throw it all in the bag and I can just play games if I want. But then I either talk to people in the car, though I could still play games while doing it, but I just don't. So I'll end up talking to people in the car, or being the kind of guy that I am, I get obsessed with road scenery and reading road signs. So I'll just stop everything just to look at road signs and then turn my head back to see the signs that we just passed. It's that kind of thing. So it's an odd thing for me, but that's pretty much how I've always been. It's a bad habit. So, but I do also have one of those giant battery packs, which should be Switch safe for charging the thing up, because funny enough, Nintendo eventually ended up getting some, you know, Nintendo branded battery packs, you know, charger packs. So you can, really? Okay, plug it in. Yeah. But here's the thing. If I remember correctly, because it's been a minute, they are the exact same brand and model that I bought a year or two prior to play Pokemon Go. But it's the exact same thing, but they put a Nintendo symbol on the side of the bus, the Mario logo. That's the only difference. So,
and the price went up $50.
Oh, you know it did. You know it did. So I'm like, I think it's safe to plug my Switch into this battery pack if necessary. I'm not going to sweat the hard stuff here. Just want to play my game machine and have fun with it. So I'm going to have that. If I run out of juice while I'm driving, but I want to get back to the game, I'm going to turn it off, plug it in, and then play something else, and then come back to it later as I juggle things on a 15-hour car ride. Of course, now comes the hardest question. What the hell to take for the road trip? Because I have no idea. I mean, I got blood stain, but I'm sure you've heard the stories about that. So I'm not sure. I'm hoping that they're over-exaggerating, that the game is at least playable and not a complete mess. But aside from that, I don't know what to even bring along. I just have a lot I want to play all at once. I'm still playing Labyrinth of Refrain because that game is just so good. But I'm back and forth on it. Which, by the way, if you've never played it, go listen to the review I did of it and pick it up. It's a gem of a dungeon crawler. I love it. I love it so much.
I still need to pick that one up.
It's good, though. I'm not sure what the rarity rate is on it, because I mean, at one point I thought about buying a physical copy just to have it on my shelf. And at that time, I couldn't find it anywhere. Though it might have been just like a weird time where they were sold out, for all I know. It's very possible.
But I don't know on that one.
Yes, you do. You're holding out. You totally know.
But, oh, yeah. Boy. So what else have you been up to?
Aside from the games and stuff, just still doing podcasting stuff. Still looking for work. Not out of work, just trying to look for a new job. And trying to figure out what makes women, what women want. Did they make a movie about that?
Yeah, but I'm of no use there.
Me neither. What a coincidence. But I'm doing those things and playing board games out the wazoo. You know, having that problem where like I'm trying to figure out what games I want to take with me on the road trip. I have like 200 board games, but I need to figure out which 30 or so I'm taking. I'm like, I don't know who I'm taking any of them. I'm not even going to play any of the stuff I take with me. Doesn't stop me from not making any logical moves and just packing a bunch up in the bags. But because this happened last year. I went down there and they had so much available to play that I didn't even bother with half the stuff I brought. I just played new stuff. And then my friend and I were planning for the night trip down there tomorrow. And I'm like, I'm not going to take anything. And then out of nowhere, it's like, just put this in the bag, put that in the bag. Someone can teach us how to play that. God, Jesus crap. Come on. And now I have a lot of junk that I'm lugging down again. So, but yeah, that's been my life. It's surprisingly not exciting, but at the same time, it could be worse. I could be telling you about my basement flooding or, I don't know. The demonic gate opening up in my backyard, you know, all that kind of
thing. I mean, that's always good.
No, it's not. Demons, maybe if they were friendly demons. Demons aren't friendly, but maybe if we were on the same wavelength and the sense of, hey, I know what you guys are here for. I'm on the level. Let's just, you know, let's just hate humanity together. It's not that big a deal. Don't kill me.
See, and you have to befriend them.
Yeah, I'm trying. I need to find common ground, and maybe we can work out some sort of business arrangement so they don't just, you know, rise up and then kill me and lower the value of my property. You know, that would be a problem. I don't need that.
I wouldn't want to lose you as a reviewer either. So demons killing you wouldn't be a very good thing for the show overall.
But not as a friend, Jesus, Joe. What did I ever do?
Why? Friend implies that you like me, and nobody likes me.
Oh, hush your damn fuss. Hush your fuss. You heard? I'm actually sure that if you were local, we'd probably play games and stuff often.
Probably.
Or what would likely happen, I'm like, look, you got to start playing some damn board game. You got to switch it up.
I don't have anyone to play board games with.
So you're saying that if you had people to play with, you'd play them.
I mean, I have HeroQuest up in my bedroom. But I would love to play HeroQuest. Yeah.
Wow, you know that game is rare as balls, right?
Uh-huh.
Touché. Yeah, I actually got to play that for the first time at I went to a convention in Connecticut called Retro World, and they had that in the game room there. So I sat there and played that for. I was like, well, this is what all the fuss is about. This game is actually kind of fun, which is amazing. In the sense that HeroQuest came out, what, like the 80s or early 90s?
It was 90s. One of those
two. It was the 90s. And for all the games that have come out since then, HeroQuest still totally works in a sense that it may still be one of the best of that type of board game, even after the so-called board game renaissance. It's amazing. So, I tell you, I don't know. But honestly, we definitely would probably play games often if you were a localite.
Probably. And looks like I was wrong. It came out in 89.
Well, you were close. That's why I wasn't sure, because like it had that. It felt like an 80s game, but 89 is pretty much teetering the cusp. So
yeah,
but I'll still take that 80s.
It was good though. I fucking love the game. I would love to play it with some friends nowadays. I used to play with. It was me, my dad, and my brother all playing together when I was a kid, and I would love to go back and play it some more.
Do you still have any of the sheets left over, or do you just translate them all to like physical paper now?
I don't remember, because I bought the set used. I actually bought two partial sets at MagFest back when it was still at the Hilton, and back before it was like a charity auction. This was back when it was just a free-for-all auction.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold two partial sets of HeroQuest. I combined them. I have a bunch of extra pieces. I threw out all the broken ones. So I have a complete plus set. I just don't remember if there's any of the papers. I'm pretty sure it still had some character sheets with it.
Yes, what's up.
I would have to open it up and double check on everything, but yeah, I'm pretty sure it has papers with it.
Yeah, because worst case, make sure you have enough so you can get down to the wire. You can laminate some and just have them forever.
Yeah, take them to Kinko's and just make a bunch of copies.
Yeah, which reminds me, I guess that's true. I could just go to Kinko's and not worry about getting my own laminator. They would laminate them for me.
There you go.
Boom. And I have a couple games upstairs like that now where it's like, here's your rolling right game. We need some paper. We got to give you 100 sheets. Like, what happens when I run out? Well, your game becomes useless. Figure it out. Like, well, now I got laminated sheets, so fuck off. Took care of business every day.
That's the way to do it. But speaking of taking care of business, should we get down to brass tacks and talk some reviews?
Every day.
Well, not every day, just today.
This all right?
All right, well, first game to talk about tonight is called Red Faction Guerrilla Remastered. Ha 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 ha. Developed by Yeah, I know, because it's on Mars and it's remastered.
No, I see it's on Jupiter. That's the plot twist.
Oh, we didn't even get into the review yet and you're spoiling things.
I wish. That would have been awesome if that was a plot twist.
That would be a crazy plot. Jupiter.
And all of a sudden the sky just turns blue or some crap. Like, it's not red at all. It's blue, baby.
It's been Jupiter the whole time. Anyway, developed by Volition and Kaiko, published by THQ Nordic, released July 2nd on the Switch for $29.99. Red Faction Guerrilla redefines the limits of destruction-based gameplay with a huge open world, fast-paced guerrilla-style combat, and true physics-based destruction. We covered the remastered edition on Xbox and PlayStation a while back. It's finally making the jump over to Switch, and I want to know, how does it perform on the Switch?
I got to tell you, it actually seems to perform very well on this system. As you know about me, whenever I review a game, you're likely to know that I only use it on handheld unless it seems like I need to test it on the dock. And this was no exception. So if there was going to be a performance issue, I would have definitely stumbled across it.
Oh yeah.
And I honestly didn't notice anything. At worst is there some loading times, but that isn't such a big deal because once it's loaded, you're in the main world and the world is huge and things happen. So, like, when I say loading, I'm not saying, like, you go from one district to the next and the game has to stop and load. I'm saying, like, starting the game up, choosing your files, like, okay, loading, and it does all the work. And once it feels like it takes a bit longer than I would have liked, but not too long. But then once it throws you into the game, everything's there. All the assets are running, and you're good to go. And even when you get missions, which is when a load will occur because they have to load up the mission briefing and all that good stuff, that isn't even a problem. Like, goes fairly fast. It's just that initial load that I'm like, it'd be nice if it could go faster. Also, one thing that I wish they did, considering that it was a, you know, remastered edition, is that in games like this is no exception, you have a variety of missions that you can undertake, of a variety of different types. You have, you know, rescue missions, defend missions, just outright slaughter jerks missions, all that kind of stuff. And typically when you're doing those, you might have a moment where you know within the run that you screwed it up and that you want to start over. And I really wish they had the option to just replay mission in the start menu. But from what I could tell, it did not exist. So you have to let yourself fail the mission if you want to restart before you can try it again. So that was a slight thing that was kind of weird, which I wish the remaster would have accounted for. But performance-wise, I honestly had no problems with it. I'm not sure how zeroing in your... was going down the scope worked on the other systems, but on this one, that's one thing I wish they changed, or at least maybe you can map and I just didn't check. But to say go into like a closer view of your gun to aim, you have to press in the right thumbstick, and I'm not sure if you've done that on a Switch yet, but
yeah,
it's not an enjoyable feeling to like it's not an intuitive thing to do. Maybe if I was playing on a pro controller I'd feel differently, but on here, actually, I feel like even on a Pro, I wouldn't like that so much because I always feel like if I want to zoom and I want to press a button like in a corner, one of the triggers or something.
Yeah. But
that was something I found annoying. And it got to the point where whenever it came down to get the firefights, if I couldn't just throw a bunch of bombs and then detonate them, which for the record, I love doing that. If I couldn't just throw grenades and detonate them, I was just like kind of running really nilly, like, come on, spray, something hit. Somebody needs to get hit by one of these errant bullets. Because trying to get the aim just right while I'm taking shots from around me was annoying to me. But I'm not sure if I'd want to call that a performance issue so much as a control concern that you just have to adjust to and also just get good, as they say.
I'm pretty sure it was the same on Xbox when I played it, where you had to aim by clicking in the thumbstick, and it just felt weird then as well.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that. But for the game itself, though, I'm aware that you also enjoyed the game, but I'm going to follow suit in the sense that I think the game is fun. I will say that the plot doesn't really grab me much. I think I might just be becoming an old curmudgeon in some ways, though, whereas like it takes a lot for plot. I don't want to say it takes a lot, but it's harder for me to feel concerned about plot in some of these games now, because a lot of time the plot is just there to give you an excuse to do the stuff that the game gives you to do.
Yeah.
And I get that feeling with this game where it's like they start you off like, you know, hey, my brother wants me to come to Mars and mine some rock. And then it's actually a real quick jump to shit. I'm a resistance soldier. I didn't ask for this, whatever. And at that point, it's just, I don't care about the people and what I'm doing. I just want to stop the evil corporation by destroying all of their property, which, by the way, that to me is one of the coolest things an open world game has ever had you really do to liberate, so to speak, because you don't get to do that in most games. It's never, you never outright go around and just smash up property. It's usually, well, walk around, you know, kill a few guys, you know. You never feel like you can really, truly do damage, lasting damage to the environment. In this game, you can. Though, I will say, similar to how Just Cause 4 does it, though Just Cause 4 came out way later, but similar to how Just Cause 4 is, the damage you do, for the most part, from what I could tell, doesn't 100% stay. Like, you can walk away from an environment and come back later on, and, like, non-story buildings will come, well, they'll be there to be destroyed again. But I think that's just the nature of the beast, really.
Yeah.
Like, have you noticed that, too?
I didn't notice it that much on Xbox, but I wasn't really paying attention to it.
Yeah, I will say that
I just know that the important buildings, when you destroy them, like, they're gone.
Yeah, they stay gone. Those bad boys are done. And I will say also that, for better or for worse, by the way the environment is designed, because, I mean, this is Mars. You're not on Earth where they could populate the environment with, like, lush trees and beautiful lakes or even bustling streets. This is freaking Mars, a mining Mars at that. So it is a very red environment with rocks and ore and mining trucks. This is not a beautiful place. And I'm not saying that from a graphics perspective. I'm saying it from an environment perspective. It is not a beautiful place. So you're not going to be, you know, remembering landmarks and going, oh, man, this I love this place. You're just like, no, I want to go here. I'm going to drop some charges. I want to blow this building up, kill some dudes on the way out, and I'm going. Like, I'm not concerned so much about lasting appeal of locations in this game. So that may not even be something that people are concerned about either, because they'll just be running their missions. You'll look at your map. You'll see that there's a need here, here, and here. You'll plot your course. You'll go there. You'll do it. Get your skill ups. And by the way, I do like the fact that when you destroy buildings, you get the salvage scrap, which is the currency in the game. That's something nice about this. Like, you get a reward for all of your hard, fun work. Just smash things and get paid, literally. And I like the fact that you eventually get a jetpack for, like, upwards momentum, which is cool. The only thing I will say is that the game hinges heavily on how much you enjoy destroying property. Like, if you find yourself, if you feel as though you're going to get bored of the idea of being able to destroy locations and anything like that, the game itself may not have a lasting impression on you, because, I mean, I think the destruction of buildings is the standout element of the game. Like, that's the hallmark of this game, is to be able to destroy locations and actually make it a part of what the game's about, no less. Me personally, I enjoy smashing crap up. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. It's a good time. Just like I said, I'll be surprised if anybody comes into this and goes, man, I really feel for this Mason guy. He led a hard life, and he's been working really hard to help the faction. No, I was like, yo, when can I get my arc impulse? When can I upgrade? Tell me more. How many more charges do I have to find?
I want more charges to blow more things up.
Exactly. I want more charges. Like, I mean, it's not to belittle the work, because the voice work is good. I mean, I know I even recognize some of the voice actors in the game. Like, the voice work is fine. You know, all that stuff is just, aside from that, I just can't get all that vested. Though, I will say I still cared about not pissing off the faction units that I'm working for, in that if you're in a base, because, again, you can destroy anything in the game. You can just run around with a hammer and just wreck walls. But if you do it inside of a faction base, which is the basically the locations that are supposedly safe locations, you will piss people off, and they will try to kill you eventually if you just keep doing it. And you'll also bring down morale, which will give you less rewards on future like quest successes, and also from ammo crates that are littered throughout the world. So you won't be doing much killing in those locations. You will find yourself kind of feeling concerned about whether or not everybody in an environment is A-okay. And if a group of enemies show up, the EDF shows up at a location, you will be concerned about if people survive or not, because that will affect morale, which, yeah. So, though, I will say I do kind of wish that in a firefight, they made it a bit easier to tell who the heck is who. Did you ever notice that? While you're playing it, you'll be in a skirmish, and you'll just kill a guy that you thought was an enemy, and he wasn't. because he just had to be the thick of it. Like, well, there goes my morale. Why the hell did you get in my way, jerk? Oh, right, the whole war thing.
Yeah, I've melee killed so many of my own teammates just because they were in my way and I thought they were an enemy.
Mm-hmm. Like, I wish maybe if they even just, like, gave a bit of a, like a light outline and say, hey, that's a bad dude, or make their outfits brighter. I don't know, something that just makes it easier to say in the middle of a situation, he's on my side. I won't plug him.
Well, as it stands, $30 on it. What do you think of Red Faction?
I think it's a fine title and a worthy play. Again, due to the fact that it actually runs on the system without any real hiccups or need to, you know, lose any performance, I think that's a standout in and of itself. Plus, the game happens to be fun, so there you go.
And it's a really good price for a Switch game. Normally, we see remasters come to the Switch and they're $50. So to see one at only $30, that's pretty nice.
I think that's maybe maybe that's a THQ thing, because wasn't Darksiders $30 also?
It might have been. I don't remember. But yeah, THQ seems to be pretty good on their pricing. Pretty fair.
Yeah. And honestly, I feel like that whole getting them on the go makes it worth its weight in gold. So it's something to be said about that. And a lot of times we're like, hey, you know, like I have this actually on 360, but being able to play it on my little handheld Switch, my Bob, feels real good.
Now you get to play it on the go, and you get to play it on your vacation, on your car trip.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Actually, that will be some of the time I spend is on that while I'm on the ride.
There you go. We're getting you set up.
Maybe. Not let you inflate your head there, Joe. No.
Anyway, you got one other game to talk about this week. That's called Antiquia Lost, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released June 19th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99. Edelstein, a world inhabited by three tribes, was the site of the great battle in the past. Today, the world is at peace due to three tribes' cooperation, but dark clouds are gathering over the future of the world that everyone thought would go on forever. It's time for Bind and his friends to discover the truth of the history of the world. Brunel, tell us about Antiquia Lost.
Well, I think it's funny that there's three tribes, and you meet all three tribes within a very short amount of time. So, Antiquia Lost is, well, Kemco-style RPG, in that the game kind of throws you into what I like to typically call a condensed SNES-type experience, in that it feels like you're playing like a Lufia game, but the writing might be different. is different. The quality of the writing is very different. But aside from that, I feel like you're playing something out of like a Lufia game or something, which is a good thing. The gameplay in this involves you befriending four different, well, aside from the main character, Bond, he befriends three other characters, all very coincidentally. Like, there's not even a try to set him up. It's like, hey, what are you doing here? Let's just go together. Okay, and now we're hanging out together forever.
Yeah, now we're friends.
I don't know. Huh?
Now we're friends, yay.
Yeah, friends forever. But the way it works in the game itself is kind of nice, in that combat, when you meet these characters and bring them all in, they each kind of play slightly differently. Well, I don't want to say play differently, but their characteristics and gameplay are different. So, for example, the human tribe is just kind of, they have different names, but I don't remember them. The human tribe is a very generic, like, you know, default, you know, vanilla character type. You know, they take base physical damage and base magical damage or whatever. But there's like a tribe that's like jelly people. So they're like the water people, but they're basically jelly. And their perk is that they take 50% less physical damage in the game compared to everybody else, but they take more damage in magic. So it's a matter of balancing where you want them to be positioned. Do you want them in the front because you're fighting a lot of physical dudes or whatever? And then there's like a feral character, like the wolf people, where when they hit a certain hit point threshold, their strength like kind of jacks up quite a bit. So it's like almost like they go like into an adrenaline mode and they get stronger as they're about to die. So that's what makes them different in combat. But in addition to that, there's also a weird like mechanic for one of the characters. So there's one character in the game that's half human, half jelly person. And whereas everybody else levels up in combat by fighting jerks and doing whatever, she does not gain experience at all. Instead, she gets stronger by having you feed her accessories that you find throughout the game. So the same stuff that you would equip to do things, you can also say, screw it, I don't want to equip it, I'm just going to give it to her. And you feed it to her, and she'll get her hit points, strength, vitality, or whatever, just boosted. So if you do not give her enough stuff, she'll fall behind everybody else and she'll become kind of lame. So you don't want to let that happen. But of course, then it comes to the question of determining when is enough to give away, when you want to feed her. But everybody else is traditional leveling up. Fight a bunch of dudes, get experience, level up, got a bing, bada boom. Skills in this game, attack skills and magic skills. So three elements, water, earth, and fire. And when you get skills in those departments, they're just basically magic. And when you use them over and over again, they level up till eventually you just get stronger. They don't cost less, which I wish they did. At least I never noticed them costing any less. But they do get stronger as you level them up. And a nice little perk that I've come to notice is the attack that results in you leveling up the skill seems like it does like double damage. So if you know you're about to level up a skill, you can kind of just stock it until you fight a boss and then start using all of your skills that are about to get boosted. It's like, boom, double damage, double damage, double damage, double damage. And it just feels nice. Feels good. Normal skills are similar leveling up system, but I've come to notice that they seem to do more in regards to like variations of attacks. Like one might be like a string, like a bunch of arrow attacks together. One might be, you know, hit columns and rows of enemies at the same time, you know, so I always end up using those when I want to hit groups of guys, and magic when I want to just kind of do focus attacks or elemental weakness, you know, exploitation. Eventually you will get like a magic attack that hit more than one dude, but for the most part, you'll mainly be using magic for weakness exploitation. The battle system itself, aside from those things, is a turn-based system, but it's done within, I want to say, sort of a time bar, in that everyone is on the bar, monsters and humans, or and your party members, and when their time comes up, like based on how fast that character determines when their turn will come. So sometimes you might see a guy lap a monster and go again before the monster does if their speed's high enough. But what ends up happening is when your character goes up on the status on the bar, they get a chance to make an attack, and if they've done the attack, that's great, and if they don't, they don't. Later on in the game, though, you'll unlock something called Brave Arts. What Brave Arts are is this weird thing where the main character, they don't even really quite explain, it's just a thing he does where he's able to bring out the latent power of people that he's friends with or he's close to, which is funny because he only just met these people and he's close to all of them, whatever. Anyway, he can do that for them. So what this results in as far as gameplay is concerned is when you take damage and receive and give damage, you build up a Brave Arts gauge. And when it maxes out, you can use the special ability of one of your characters, being the form of a Brave Art. Not the main character, just the other three. And each of them does something different. For example, one of the characters can transform into like one of the random monsters they're fighting and does an attack. Another character pretty much boosts everybody's stats, which is really freaking nice. And another one just kind of heals everybody, and so on and so forth. Now, as you play the game, you'll be able to interact with the party members and kind of boost their trust levels. And as you do that, you will ultimately end up making it so that those skills are a little bit stronger. So as you play the game, you'll want to actually get those characters boosted up together so that they can actually have that relationship built. And as you do that, they'll get stronger. Those Brave Arts will become a little stronger, so they'll become more effective in combat. Two more things to mention in the game for sure. And then just actually one more thing to slip in there. The game's not all that difficult, but I also play it on normal mode. If you want the game to be a sponge fest, you can jack the difficulty up, and I'm sure they'll give you that rush. But due to the fact that I didn't want to have to utilize the thing that I'm going to mention in 2 seconds, I'm content with normal. So, 2 seconds have passed. What was I talking about? So, being a Kimco RPG, you know they have the thing, the do-do-do gotcha stuff. So, the gotcha in this game is twofold. One, there are items you can buy using a currency that can be purchased with money. Though they do start you, at least I'm not sure if they do in the normal game, but I definitely know I started with a fair amount of the stuff. So it was like 1,000 crystals. And I was able to use those crystals to buy a variety of things. So, for example, you can buy items that will increase the amount of skill level boosting points you get in combat, or money in combat, or experience in combat, or a variety of items that can just generally help you in gameplay. You can spend them for that. Or the other thing you can do is get special weapons. So once you do what you take that for, is you can take the gems, you go to a gacha roulette, you can either spend 100 of them to get one pull or 10 of them to get 11 pulls. And these end up being a better set of weapons that you can acquire in the game that have, you know, better stats, better, you know, attached traits like, you know, poison or HP boosts and stuff like that. So the game pretty much entices you to want to do that. Now, there is a free version of this too that you can do that doesn't cost you gems. at all. And that's called refining through way of the Pandora. Basically, it's like Pandora tickets. So what happens there is the same logic. You know, you can spend one Pandora ticket to get one weapon, or you can spend 10 Pandora tickets to get 11 weapons. The downside to this, however, before I even get into that, the way you get Pandora tickets is every 6 battles you get one Pandora ticket. So just keep fighting dudes, you'll get tickets. Now, the downside to this Pandora ticket compared to the gems is that you get a lot less things through Pandora tickets, as in there's a lot less things that are even available to you using that. So on one hand, it's nice to have access to something that will allow you to do pulls and get cool stuff. But the downside is that you'll always be getting inferior stuff compared to using your gems to do it. So that can be taken or left as one would see fit. Me personally, I'm not one to spend my gems on, you know, things that are going to cost me money. So I just got the stuff that made the game, you know, easier to play through, like the experience boosting and all that, and left the gotcha to where it was. But if you're the type of person who wants to earn a lollipop as a weapon, hey, drop those gems on the gotcha and see what you can pull. By the way, 2% chance to get the lollipops category. So oof, but doof. But honestly, if you're okay, whether if you're not a fan of the gotcha stuff, it's not a requirement to play the game proper. So you can ignore it. No, though, even if you're not a fan of gotcha like me, you can use the Pandora tickets and the gems that come with the game to get stuff that you want and still utilize it in a sense that it works for you. So,
yeah, the plus side is you can't spend real money on this stuff. That's one thing you cannot do. It's just in-game currency that you earn through battles. The only microtransactions that they have that cost actual money are like the usual Chemco ones that give you an experience boost or like skill boost up or no battles, but there's no way to spend actual real cash on the in-game store like that, which is a good thing.
Huh. That's actually a very good thing, because like my logic, my understanding was that I thought you could buy the crystals. Nope. To use them. Oh, I see. Yeah, you can only buy the very specific bonus.
Yep.
Huh. Well, that's much better then. It's gotcha.
But it's not real money, which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing, yeah, because when it's real money, then that's when it just kind of makes you go, eh.
Yeah, I think on the mobile versions, that stuff was microtransaction that you could pay real money for, but when they brought them the console, they got rid of that stuff because it's a full price game now.
Oh, good. I'm glad you said that then, because as you know with me, I'm like, I ain't messing with that. I see purchase premium, like, nope. Like, I know this is a review, but I ain't going to look at it. Screw that. But the fact that, yeah, that means you don't even have the option to purchase gems. That's good. And the other reason why I thought that was purchasing gems is because on the menu screen for purchase premium additional content, the icon there is actually the gem, the crystals. Mm. So it's like, buy more crystals. Like, fuck you.
No. Yeah, the thing is they're selling, there's an SP crystal, a skill level crystal, and an experience value crystal, which those just boost like your XP gain by 3 or your skill level by 5. Crystals that you could equip.
Yeah, so it's basically like how, Assassin's Creed Odyssey recently did it, where it is like you can go in and just buy boost to make the game play faster in a sense, because
pretty much
you'll get things quicker. So I'm okay with that kind of thing, because they're solely there for like, hey, if you're that impatient, here you go. There's an option for you, you know. But if you don't want to go that route, you don't have to, which is all right.
So, yeah, I have no problem with Chemco's microtransactions just because they're all convenient stuff and it's all fair. Like, it's not stuff that's going to break the game in crazy ways or do anything crazy like that. It's just, you know, it'll make it an easier time to level up and get through the game. And it's not required at all.
I think that's the most important part for me, too. Like, there's no room, no potential for wailing. So,
yeah,
you're like, what the hell are you talking about?
I know what whales are in paid games.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, that's, I'm always anti-whaling, but as long as that's not the factor, then I won't give them so much McGuff on their dealy here. Now, the gameplay, like I said earlier, I honestly find the gameplay to be enjoyable. I mean, hopefully, if you're buying this, you're going to find yourself more attracted to how the story plays out. For me, It didn't quite catch me, but I did enjoy the battles. I enjoy using the different skills and trying to boost them. And I even caught myself at one point, this was not intended, by the way, so that's a plus for the game's sake, where I found a healing spot, and I was like, you know, before I go to fight the obvious boss up top, I'm going to run around in circles and just boost some skills, because the healing station is right there. Mm-hmm. So I ran around, just fought some mobs, and just boosted my skills, and I was like, whoa, I just spent 20 minutes here, you know, juicing up my guys. That has to be a good thing, right? So, honestly, I think the game works. It's just a matter of coming in, knowing what you're going to get, which is a, like I said, it's like a SNES-style RPG that has been souped up to be played on a modern-day console, which is not a bad thing.
I agree with you there. Definitely not a bad thing. I personally have picked up every Kemco RPG that has released on the Xbox so far, and I picked this one up as well, which you can attest to because I offered you the review because I bought the game already.
It's like, hey, man, you want to give this a go? Like, sure, why the heck not?
So for $15 on Antiquia Lost, what do you say?
I think it's honestly a buy, especially if you're actually looking to get some RPG time in on your Xbox. I feel as though I enjoyed the character work in this game as far as, like, you know, boosting them more than some of the previous ones I've had. So honestly, I would even say this is better than a lot of the other ones I've played prior to this.
Yeah, it's a really enjoyable game. I've put a bunch of hours into it myself, and I'm really enjoying it. I enjoy these Kemco games because they're just simple, straight to the point, old school RPGs. There's not a lot of bullshit with it. It's just enjoy a good retro RPG.
I said that is a good point too, which I didn't even mention, though you just kind of stated it, in that I don't, every one of these I've ever played, I never found myself going, huh, here's a complicated mechanic that I got to figure out. Because a lot of times for RPGs to stand out in this day and age, they try to add something unique that makes it tick. Like, this game has a battle system where you have to press the button at a certain amount at a certain time, but in this, only in this instance, otherwise, you know, it gets a little complicated sometimes. And in this, it's just use a skill, you know, kill a guy, level up, move on. With the only real exception being the weapon refining thing, which honestly can be largely ignored if you don't even feel like utilizing it. I should have mentioned that too. Weapon refining being combining a weapon with a weaker weapon to move the stats over to it, and sometimes the skills.
I think Chris Taylor referred to it as weapon feeding.
I think weapon feeding is a weapons good way to another. It. Yeah, that sounds alright, because it's like it's cannibalizing weaponry. That's a good way to put it. I'm going with that from now on. Weapon cannibalization. Boom.
There you go.
Feeding weapon feed.
Oh, man. Purnell, it is always a pleasure having you on, chatting about this kind of stuff. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
No, just get them board games out, play some time in, and just, unlike me, get some freaking sleep.
All right, moving on. We got Jacob Garner joining us. Jacob, how's it going?
You know, I'm doing this from the parking lot of a CVS, which, you know, means like one of like two things.
Herpes meds?
Or, you know, it's after Valentine's Day and I'm picking up all the candy. But
couple months late on that, don't you think?
It's on a super discount now.
I would imagine so. Jesus.
No, it's a herpes med.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I kind of... Oh, Jesus.
No, actually, it's a medicine for a cough, because, like, I don't know. I'm always, like, well, I mean, hell, listeners of the show, all two of you, have known for, like, since November, I've had, like, a cough. And it went away thanks to a new allergy med. However, I like picked up something. I don't know if like they think it's viral. I think I got a sinus infection again. Nice. So they gave me something that should control the cough. So yay.
Hooray. At least that gives you more time to play video games, huh?
Theoretically, but that's a weird segue. It's almost like you're trying to get me to review a game.
Almost. You would think so, huh? It's almost like that's the entire point of these episodes.
Well, I mean, you do like news of the week, you know.
That's
like,
on the other episode. That was
the other episode.
Yeah, the one that came out last time and the one that's coming out next with Cole.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. She's not on this one. This is the Wednesday show, you dipshit.
I don't know. Way to like, remove all mystery from this podcast. I mean, they could be like, oh, he's recording it on a Friday. No, it's really just Monday.
Yeah, it is.
So how are you doing, Joe?
Oh. I'm doing good. My dad's in to visit, so I got to see him, and I'll be seeing him again later on this week. So it's good catching up with my dad. I only get to see him like once or twice a year.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Aside from that, though, just killing time, doing the show.
Doing nothing.
Pretty much. That's my life.
Being a crazy cat guy.
Yeah, I work hard at that. I work harder at that than I do at this show.
That's fair. Yeah. So, I guess you want me to review a game?
Yeah, we might as well get to that, because the next game to talk about is called War Tech Fighters, developed by Drakkar Dev, published by Blowfish Studios. It released June 27th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $19.99. War Tech Fighters, the space action game that combines the spectacular action of Japanese anime with Hollywood blockbusters. Configure, upgrade, and customize your War Tech and dive into battle to fight against the Zetronian forces and save your galaxy. Jacob, tell us about War Tech Fighters.
Pretty much, imagine if Armored Core and Dynasty Warriors Gundam had a love child.
I'm sold. That,
yeah, you should be. If you're familiar with like both game series, yeah, this is that game.
Ooh.
Like, yeah, I honestly, wait, I thought you played this too.
I did. I'm trying to keep up the banter of back and forth.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You're like, oh, really? Oh,
yes, I'm trying to sound interested in what you have to say, Jacob. I'm trying to be a good co-host.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So tell me more, Jacob. It sounds intriguing.
So first off, when you first offered me the chance to review this, I was like, heck yeah, because I had played War Tech Senko no Randi back when I was in college, which was also like a mech thing, and here I am thinking like, oh cool, they finally made a sequel to that game that I literally bought for $5 at Circuit City.
Circuit City, holy hell.
Yeah, I know. And also $5 for like a brand new game, holy hell there too. However, doing some quick internet research, I realized, oh crap, I just signed up for a game that's actually not the sequel to what I thought it was. So I was like, okay, well, I'm still going to try this out. And then, yeah, holy shit, this is an amazing game. Especially when you factor in the fact that you're buying it for $20. Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, let's start at the beginning. What do you do in the game? Tell us that.
Good place to start. Okay. What now?
Oh God. I asked, what do you do in the game? Tell us, what do you do?
Okay. So, let me get this out there first. The story is nothing to get excited about, which is fine. Like, it's your average, mech anime plot line. Like, you are this one brave, plucky pilot, and you have to, like, beat back the forces of the evil empire. It begins with a Z. I don't remember what it's named.
Zetronian.
Zetronian, thank you. I think it's required by law that in all anime like that involves mechs, if there's an evil empire, it has to be start with the letter Z. Gundam had Zeon, so there we go. Zeon, I think.
Close.
I don't remember. It's been a while since I watched Gundam. Anywho, so the story's generally lacking. But anyways, you pilot your mech, which, by the way, you can choose from like three different styles: light, medium, heavy. All of them have like, their pluses and minuses. Medium is obviously the most balanced of them all. Light means like, you get to move around a lot quicker. But of course, heavy also means you dish out more firepower, but you're also, somewhat slower, standard.
Yeah, I picked the tank because I don't like dodging.
Imagine that. You don't like moving.
Son of a...
I went with medium just because I wanted a nice balance. So anyways, you go through all the missions. Storyline, as I said, nothing to get excited about, but there are enough various missions, you know. A lot of it's like attack, attack, attack. You know, there are some defend, there are some escort, there are some resource gathering. It varies it up enough that, you know, you don't really have to worry about, like, you know, oh, I'm bored. Like, the game always throws, like, new stuff at you. And, like, the amount of customization is pretty, like, it's pretty in-depth for a $20 game, you know, of all the different colors that you, like, and stuff that you can add on to your mech. And, like, of course, you can research stuff to improve its abilities. Of course, sometimes, like, it'll improve it in one area, but, of course, it'll decrease your speed. So you have to tinker with your mech enough to get that sweet spot that you're comfortable with.
To find that right balance.
Yeah. The controls felt great. One of the things I loved about it was that it's just, I mean, as I said, it was like the love child of Armored Core and Dynasty Warriors Gundam. I love that whole thing where if, like, you got your enemy's health low enough, you could just run up there and just, like, slash the crap out of them.
Yeah.
And, like, you'd get those animations. Yeah. Those were pretty well done. I will give them that. Crud.
You said the controls were fine. I did have an issue a little bit with the controls. Moving around, I didn't have a big problem with. It's the whole moving up and down without traveling. What is it? The A and the X buttons or the A and the Y, something like that?
Yeah.
Just trying to control moving up and down while doing everything else. It just kind of threw me for a loop. It took me a little bit to get my old aging brain wrapped around the control scheme.
Wait, so is there a game that I didn't have issues with the controls, but you did?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, Joe. I was
frozen over.
Oh my god, a game that I'm better than you at.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Oh my god, it's the only game that I'm better than you at. Beautiful, beautiful. All the more reason to recommend this. I hope that they use that for, like, the review, you know, headlines. I'm better than Joe at this game. 10 out of 10.
I'm sure that's going to be in the tweet about it, isn't it?
What? Definitely not. Yeah, it totally is.
So what else do you do in the game?
I thought I already talked about it.
Okay, do you have any negatives about the game? Because it's been all positive so far.
Honestly, like, I mean, the storyline was ho-hum. I don't know. I mean, the graphics, like, I thought that they looked fine. Like, I mean, especially when you consider it's a $20 title. Honestly, the generic storyline was just about it. Like, I was fine with it. Like, this is one of the few games that I'm like, hell yeah, absolutely get day one. Even though I think it's already been out for, like, a week.
Yeah, something like that. We couldn't have it on...
Get it day seven! Get it day seven!
So there's nothing else you want to talk about the game, because there's, like, replayable challenges, there's missions, there's, What other kind of fun stuff is in there?
One of the things that I thought was kind of fun, like, you know, like, with the missions, you'd have to go off and you'd have to find, like, rare things so you could, cause some of the stuff with research, you'll definitely need to replay, some of it. And of course, you know, they'd offer up stuff and it's just like, oh, well, you can't, you know, get this thing without getting this very rare mineral. So it's almost like the game has collectibles in it. If you're one of those guys that likes doing completionists, there's plenty to do in here. Also, if you're an achievement whore, which, I mean, Joe, you are, you know, there's a plenty of easy achievements to get in here. There's a lot of, like, first time you buy, you know, a laser sword, first time you cut somebody with your laser sword, did you buy a shield? Yay! There's an achievement, you know. All that.
Did you replay a mission? I like that. There's a bunch of achievements in the game. I like when games come out and they have more than 12 achievements. It seems so many games anymore come out and there's like 12, 13 achievements and that's it.
But yeah.
It's good to see a game come out with a bunch of achievements that are just varied and fun to do.
Yeah, and that it wants you to like keep replaying the game and find new styles and like new ways of going through missions and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's good to see a game have fun with achievements.
Yeah, and also, I mean, like, I like that there were definite, like, you know, there's definite ways to go about different missions. The same mission, but there's different ways, like, there's a good way to go about it if you're heavy, there's a good way to go about it if you're light. I don't know. Like, I guess it was just, like, even the missions felt balanced. Like you're trying to hide from, like, the enemy. Well, even if, like, you're a big guy, you can still hide behind asteroids and stuff like that. And, you know, or, you know, if you're light, you could dart away from them. You know, I don't know. I really dug it. It came out of nowhere. And, yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised with it.
Well, then your official verdict for $20 is?
Absolutely friggin' buy it. Absolutely. Loved it, loved it, loved it. This is one of the very few that I'm like, you know, absolutely get, well, you know, I would say day one, but that's already passed, but, you know,
day get seven. It now.
Yeah, day seven, absolute day seven purchase. I'm totally cool with the full price of it, of $20. Hell yeah. I'll be honest, I would have been okay with 40.
Don't tell them that.
Can you edit that out?
No, I'm too lazy. So I guess you told them that.
Damn it. Well, I guess we know what the sequel's going to cost.
Pretty much. I got to agree with you on the buy it rating. There's a lot of content in the game to justify the price. It's a lot of fun. The controls, while it took me a little bit to get used to once the
Because you're click, old and dumb.
I am
you're
dumb.
You're old and old.
Yeah.
I didn't just call you dumb. I called you old and dumb.
I know. I was trying to pretend that I'm young.
No.
My back hurts.
Who are you again?
I don't remember. Jacob, always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Damn it. Why am I never prepared for this?
It's like I don't ask you every single time.
I know. No, I don't got anything.
All right, and finally tonight we've got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing all right.
How's things been?
I've been okay. Just been kind of anticipating games coming out, buying games I shouldn't, and then spending all my time streaming Skyrim.
Yeah, I saw you getting back into the streaming thing. How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good, actually. Yeah, some people are finding me, so pretty good. We're almost through our first legendary build, and then we're going to start another. Actually, on my Facebook page that you link to whenever these episodes go up on Facebook, I have a poll all week for people to decide my next build.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you're interested in watching me stream and you want to actually help determine what I'm doing next, that's a thing you can do.
I will have to look for it and vote.
Yeah, you've been in this. I've seen you in the stream sometimes, so.
Yeah, I drop by when I can. When I see you streaming and nothing else is going on, I try to drop in and say hi for a little bit.
As long as nothing else is going on.
I mean, if there's like a Rock Band stream going on, I'm going to go with Rock Band all the time.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, that's fine.
I love my Rock Band streams.
Fine. Nice.
It's like free music in the background. People use Spotify or Pandora. I use Rock Band on Twitch.
Might have to try that sometime. I don't think I've done that yet.
It's fun. I don't know why I've gotten really into watching people stream Rock Band because I don't play it enough on my own, I guess.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Do they have like bands that like really like dress up and stuff?
No, I just watch one, you know, the streams will just be like one person playing. That's it.
We're not at that level yet.
No, unfortunately, I haven't seen any full bands streaming together.
Yeah, we need full band streaming together. That's going to be, that'll be great.
All get on that makeup Twitch. And costumes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And like pyrotechnics and, you know, smoke machines and stuff like that.
Hell yeah.
Get on it, Twitch. Get on it.
I need a smoke machine.
Me too.
Not for streaming, just to have.
Yeah, just for this podcast.
Yes. Like, what's up, everyone? This is the SM.
Yeah. You guys ready to podcast?
Let's do this! Wow. How's everyone feeling tonight? Make some noise!
Somebody just alone in their car. Yay!
Yay! He's talking to me.
All right.
Oh, man. Anyway, should we get to some games?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Might as well, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about tonight is called Mainlining, developed by Rebelephant, which is an incredible company name.
Rebelephant.
Published by Merge Games. It released June 20th on the Switch for $14.99. Following the government's introduction of the BLU Pill Act and the Secret Intelligence Service's reintroduction of MI7, all online personal data is accessible by the powers that be. Mainlining questions techno-ethics and whether it's acceptable for an organization to have the power to look at personal data. What if someone else got the key to that? Chris, tell us about mainlining.
Mainlining, okay. So I actually didn't get much of a sense of the story, so it's nice to have been caught up.
There you go.
And what's going on. So yeah, Mainlining is a point and click adventure in the truest sense of the word, because what you're, the actual game playing field where you're pointing and clicking and trying to get the clues and the pieces to put together is literally an operating system. Yeah, this game has you sitting in front of a computer and running basically a kind of Windows XP. It's very, like, you know, doing stuff in the, like, early 2000s, maybe late 90s. Everyone's nice. Still on dial-up. You actually have to dial-up to get on the internet.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Kids these days won't get that.
I know, right? But they have this, they have, like, a constant chat bar going on the side of the screen where other people in your office or other people that work for your organization, not quite exactly sure where they are, because you never go outside the computer screen, so you don't, you kind of have to glean all information from the text that's in front of you. And it starts off, everybody's hard drives get wiped or something like that, and so they kind of have to start off bare bones. And your job is to basically, use the internet to gather information about, people who are doing bad stuff. Like, I guess the first is an unsanctioned file sharing site. Very much looks like a BitTorrent type thing. And, you have to use your elite hacker skills to figure out the identity of the person who is running, like, this thing. And, they tell you it's Muscle Boy 81 or something like that. And you have to figure out the real identity of that person, where they are, and, gather enough evidence to actually put out an arrest so that they're taken in. Whereupon I'm sure the story goes off into some direction. It kind of seems to have, like, this sort of Carmen Sandiego type goal, I guess, is because you're, sort of like getting all the information about different things and then, using that to make an arrest. And, I don't know what happens if you arrest the wrong person. I haven't done so yet. But the interesting thing about it, I guess, is that the way that you do this is that you actually have to pull up a DOS program and you actually have to type in on a virtual keyboard different DOS commands. Fortunately for people like me who only knew people who were into this stuff in the 90s and who themselves took no part of it because there were Super Nintendos to play.
I was the same.
Yeah, I was not one of those cool kids who, decided they were going to be a computer hacker, before going to college for, I don't know,
computer web hacking. Design.
Like web design or something innocuous. But so fortunately, like in the DOS, all the like DOS prompts and things like that, you can always type in help and it'll tell you the list of commands and things like that. So you can kind of go down the list and sort of try different things. The game is very trial and error. It does not, apart from occasional emails or chats, and yeah, you do get emails in like a Outlook program, including file attachments that you have to download and stuff like that. And, you know, through those, you know, they kind of, especially early on, they give you some guidelines as to like what to do, or they ask, why isn't somebody doing this? And then you're like, oh, that must be me that's supposed to do that. And, you know, you can kind of glean the information from that, but largely it, you know, first time you try to like go to the file sharing site and like, you know, get their IP, you get caught by them and like blocked out, and like they disconnect your internet and all this other stuff. And so your IT like has to, you know, reconnect everything. And they're like, I hope somebody, took a note of their IP address so that we can go in through another thing and like hack that. And I'm like, ah, God dang it. I didn't write that down. Cause there's a notepad that you can actually pull up and, you know, make notes while you're going. But I was just kind of like fumbling my way through it and being like, okay, here's a, you know, doing things extremely slow. Probably would have actually gotten fired from this job. So, yeah, it's a really interesting thing. I mean, like I said, it's basically, just kind of a fantasy for people who, you know, always wanted to hack things, I guess, because that's kind of how it goes. Like, there's, apart from certain, like, images and certain websites and things like that, there's not a lot of graphics to be had. Like, a lot of it's just this OS, you know, very pixel style. That is to say, like, pictures of people are definitely cartoons. It's not, like, photorealistic or anything like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, the whole thing doesn't actually resemble real hacking. It's just... it's just how, you know, it's kind of a version of it in their thing there. And a lot of it has like, you know, references to basically that era of the internet. So clearly it was made by somebody who, must be my age, our age or a little older, and like was into this stuff back then. The only thing about it that I would say, oh, and it of course does actually have a soundtrack that's nice and like cool and relaxing. So that's kind of nice. It doesn't really get that intense at all. It's like the intensity of the game is literally just how intense like errors are to you. Errors are like red text versus white text, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's like hardly any danger, real danger that is. But anyways, the only thing I found out that I found a little difficult about it really was two things, and it's really just kind of a limitation of the Switch. So in order to actually do any typing, obviously you've got a controller in front of you or two Joy-Cons. So you have to, you move the mouse around with your stick, and then, you know, you click with A, and then, you know, there's other buttons do other things. You know, you have an enter button and a backspace button, mapped to, other face buttons. And, so you have to like actually, push the Y button for the keyboard or just touch the keyboard icon. And it pulls up two keyboards. And so with the left stick, you're actually controlling the cursor over the left side of the keyboard, and the right stick controls the right side of the keyboard. And you can like kind of move them around because it's all opaque. So, that, you know, and then you use the shoulder buttons to type, you know, one letter at a time. So it becomes this thing where it's like, okay, I'm an elite hacker, but here I am literally chicken pecking to get anything done. I'm just like, I-P, which side is H on? Oh, yeah, right side. Hack.
I had to look down at my keyboard real quick to check on the H.
Yeah, H's and B's always throw me. But anyways, so, you know, it's like that, and the touchscreen isn't much better because, you know, it's a 6-inch screen. It's hard to like actually type. And that actually made me think, I wonder if it works with the third-party keyboard peripheral that they sell for Switch. I've been meaning to pick one of those up, so if I ever do, I'll let you know, because there's like actual QWERTY keyboards you can get and just attach the Joy-Cons to.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if that's a thing, that would definitely make this game a lot zippier, I would say. Because, you know, at the best of times, it's still typing letters one letter at a time. And there is a lot of typing. There's not only the DOS commands, there's like, you know, you have to make notes. And like, I'm sure there's much more stuff later, too, because it apparently gets pretty intense. you know, on the text side of things. and yeah, I just didn't find the touchscreen to be much of an improvement over that. And the other thing about it is that, like, so with the touchscreen, I was like, okay, well, this would be cool if I can just, like, because I have a lot of windows open here, you know? I've got this arrest info open, I got this notepad open, the website open, and the DOS prompt open. All this stuff open on this tiny screen, by the way. So, like, all of it's laying over itself. Like, I have to do it one at a time in order to see what I'm doing. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you can't even use your finger to scroll down a list of text. You actually have to take the controller and, like, and, you know, move the joystick down in order to advance the text. And then in order to, like, get to another window, you have to either touch, you know, you touch it with your finger and then you go back over to the controller to, like, move down or whatever. It is just, it felt unintuitive on the touchscreen. And I was really hoping the touchscreen would be, like, the ticket to playing this game smoothly.
Yeah.
As such, it doesn't really play very smoothly. and then, you know, I found out there's a Steam version of this, and it actually uses your mouse and keyboard, like your real ones on your computer. And I'm like, well, that would be so much better. But, you know, they I guess it did well enough that they were like, well, people on Switch are definitely going to want this. So,
well, for $15, is it worth it?
Well, $15, I mean, it really, you know, this is one of those that has a niche interest group, and that is to say you really have to want to basically do a desk job simulator. You know, I mean, it's exciting to be, I guess, unfolding this story through kind of working for the man, I suppose. And I'm sure, you know, it has this philosophical stuff elsewhere. I mean, it definitely didn't bring it up in the early part of the game I played. So I think that there's, you know, the game's well made. I think there's a lot of potential here. I just didn't find it very comfortable to play on the Switch. I think that if maybe if it worked a little more like a tablet, that would have worked better. But yeah, it was just like trying to manage screen space and trying to type were my two biggest challenges in this thing. So, you know, $15, that's an okay price for a quality point and click. That's the genre I would put this in. I'm not sure what else you could call it. I would just say, you know, if you do have a Switch and for some reason don't want to play this on a computer, then yeah, go for it. Otherwise, you may just check out that computer version.
Yeah, it sounds like the Steam version would be the way to go, control-wise.
Might be. But, you know, this could be a winner for somebody.
Nice. Well, the next game to talk about is called Graveyard Keeper, developed by Lazy Bear Games, published by Tiny Build, released June 27th on the Switch and PS4 for $19.99. Build and manage a medieval graveyard while facing ethical dilemmas and making questionable decisions. Welcome to Graveyard Keeper, the most inaccurate medieval cemetery sim of the year. Chris, tell us about Graveyard Keeper.
I love that description.
I know.
The most inaccurate graveyard simulation of the year.
Medieval cemetery sim of the year.
Yeah. they're reaching for the stars, man. That's like, I can't remember what the game was that called itself Game of the Year, even though it was, The Last Ninja, the NES port. Just for no reason at all, the NES port of the Commodore 64 game, The Last Ninja, said game or video game of the year or something like that. Like it had won an award, but it didn't cite any awards. It didn't say what award it had won. It just said it was game of the year, and it was released the same year as Super Mario Brothers 3.
Oh, yeah, then it definitely won.
Yeah, it definitely won to somebody. Anyway, I just that reminded me of that.
Nice.
So, Graveyard Keeper, yes, you may remember. Was it Lazy Bear? That's the developer?
Yep, Lazy Bear Games.
Okay, Lazy Bear Games. You may remember them from their other game that I've just
Punch
forgotten.
Punch Club.
Punch Club, thank you. I just completely forgot the name. yeah. So, in the vein of Punch Club, this is a simulation. Basically a farming sim. Some people have drawn comparisons to Stardew Valley. I can't speak to that because I've owned Stardew Valley for a long time, but because I keep playing games to review them or stream Skyrim, I have never played it. But I have played a lot of Harvest Moon, so I can definitely draw comparisons there. Nice. This will surely remind you of that, because it is a walk around, you know, your property, which is a graveyard attached to a small church. And then you have your own house, and you have a little, a mortuary, and then you can walk over to the town and interact with people in the town. And yeah, so it's like that. It has a day night cycle and, you know, inventory, and, you know, you're tasked essentially with, making this graveyard beautiful again. You know, such as it is. And, interestingly, it's actually tied to this sort of outer story where it's this guy in modern days who's hit by a car and then wakes up in medieval somewhere, and everything's just kind of bizarre. Like, nobody's quite, you know, he can talk to animals. There's the talking skull that wants beer. the talking donkey, by the way. Did I say camel? I meant donkey. But yeah, there's a talking donkey who's clearly a socialist. And, yeah, you basically kind of figure out, based on all these bizarre characters you talk to, and then, of course, a bishop who kind of oversees the church that is currently closed, that, this graveyard is in disrepair, and if you want to actually get home to your, well, it just says beloved, so wife, girlfriend, something like that, you basically have to fix up this graveyard, and, you know, no time to lose. But then again, of course, there is time to lose. You can just go straight back to bed and just, you know, wake up whenever you want to. I was pleased to find that, unlike Punch Club, this game does not really have a persistent time is running out feeling to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you do have to keep up your energy and occasionally your health, but you can just go to sleep and do that and then wake up at any time. And, you know, the day-night cycle basically determines who's going to be in town and active and who's going to be, you know, it just affects different things. It's not like one of the other farming sims where you have to go to bed at night and wake up at like 6 a.m. and, you know, do as much as you can, you know, in the allotted hours. Apparently graveyard keepers can keep whatever hours they like. So I like that. That's a real big improvement, I feel, over Punch Club. And like Punch Club, this has a lot to do, and, often very, just a huge variety of things that you have to do, and then things that you can do, and like, just tutorial after tutorial, and yet the game never actually really tells you where to go or what purpose something will serve. So you kind of have to feel around a lot for yourself on this one. You have to manage resources. You know, you can chop down trees, you can dig up things, you can, you know, pick berries and mushrooms and all this other stuff. And you basically can go around learning skills. And the more skills you learn, the more stuff you can do. And then you can build stuff. And then in that stuff, you can do more things. And it's all kind of tied into the whole grave situation. So, like, one of the early tasks is building, like, a crematorium so that you can burn up dead bodies. Speaking of dead bodies, the star of the show. Yeah, so this game, basically just every once in a while, the donkey comes along and drops off a corpse, wrapped up in a bag at your doorstep. And your job is to just pick the thing up over your head and drop it on the autopsy table, and then extract human flesh from it to sell at the tavern so that they can make food.
Yay.
Yay. This is the second game that has been dropped into my lap by this podcast that deals directly with cannibalism.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first one? I don't remember.
Symmetry, where if somebody dies, you can choose to eat them.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Anywho's, and don't think I didn't look up Symmetry to get the title prior to going live here. I didn't just pull that out of my head. Yeah, so it ends up being like this thing where not only do you... you know, and that's just a small part of it. Like, you know, basically your job is to bury the dead, and you have to make their grave sites like nice and kept and pretty, and you have to build certain structures around them. You can learn to make more elaborate structures. You can literally dig up the bodies again and just bury them somewhere else. And in fact, one of the earliest things that happens is you go to bed and wake up and a ghost called Yorick, of course, you know, wakes, you know, you talk to him and he's like, this other body in the graveyard is being extremely mean, so I want you to dig it up and throw it in the river. So you do, and then that's when your skull friend comes out and like tells you that the better way to go is to just make a crematorium and burn up bodies. And it's just like, yeah, everything kind of proceeds along in this really bizarre, surreal way. I would say the game's very dreamlike, so maybe that's what it ends up being in the end. I don't know. But what I can say is that this is a very, like... Oh, and as opposed to other farm sims and things like that, you actually can go into combat in this game. You pick up a sword from a blacksmith and have to fight slimes, and then from there, you get to keep the sword, and, you know... I guess there's other enemies that come along as well. I didn't see too many of them, but yeah, there's actual fighting in this game too, which I think is kind of cool. But yeah, it's just like the main thing about this game is just that there is such a wealth, like just so many things to do. It's actually kind of like confusing and overwhelming to the point of like frustrating where you're like, I haven't even started this one task that I've gotten that's apparently really important, and they're already giving me this other tutorial for a whole different thing. Like, it's pulling me in so many different directions. However, again, due to the fact that the game is non-urgent and actually very peaceful, like, the graphics are really pretty. I would say a step up from Punch Club, and definitely a step up from, like, something like Stardew Valley, I think. And the soundtrack is like really nice. It's like medieval tinged and like acoustic and like very, very pleasant to listen to. Like the whole, and the humor of the whole game, like, you know, you wouldn't think that, cutting a chunk of flesh out of a dead body to sell in town would be like something, you know, you'd think to stay away from that. But like the game just makes it kind of matter of factly. And like, there's a whole lot that, Quirk kind of forgives in this game. So, for that reason, you actually find yourself just really wanting to get into this and, like, play it. And, you know, for the fact that you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to really have a set schedule when you're on the job, you know, there doesn't appear to be, like, much of a time limit for anything apart from burying dead bodies before they, I guess, get too rotten, because there is a timer on them. Apart from that, it's just like this is a game that you can really kind of get into and like learn the ins and outs and like really figure out what to do, as opposed to just having, you know, having everything sort of explained to you so that you can start playing quickly. It's, you know, the kind of game you need to spend a lot of time with. Having said, there is actually an extremely detailed and very good FAQ on this game available on the internet. So... it's just on Neo Seeker, whatever. And like, yeah, Graveyard Keeper has the Steam version rather, but the Switch version is identical. It has this really elaborate walkthrough, and that helped immensely. So all the holes that the game kind of has in its ability to tell you what you need to know, like, are filled in perfectly, by reading this FAQ. So
that's good.
It's one of those rare games that I say it's really good as long as you go and read the guide a little bit to get yourself started.
Well, then your official verdict for $20?
For $20, I wouldn't have thought to get this game, but now that I've played it and, like I said, I've learned more about it, I actually think this is really good and definitely worth $20. So awesome. I say, yeah, it's actually good quality. You know, it's from a good developer, and like I said, just... if you find yourself getting lost in it, just go pull up the guide and, you know, get on your way, because you can play this game many different ways. Like, there's all sorts of customizing and like all sorts of like grinding and collecting that you can do that it wouldn't be spoiled by knowing what to do, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, go ahead and get it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, one final game to talk about tonight is called Q-Yo Blaster, developed by Team Robot Black Hat and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released June 27th on the Switch for $8.99. Q-Yo Blaster is a shooting game with peculiar characters, strange enemies, weapons, and many explosions. Chris, that's pretty straight to the point. Anything, yeah. Anything else we should know?
Like, okay, so... I've been handed three really challenging games in terms of being able to describe them. I will say that that's the running theme of tonight's reviews.
Nice.
So Kyo is it's a shmup. It's a horizontally scrolling shmup. You know, you have your regular shot, which can be upgraded throughout the levels by, you know, enemy drops. And then you have a screen clearing sort of bomb attack. And then you have another wipe attack that turns all of the bullets into coins that you can pick up, and that, you know, charges up your other screen clearing attack. That's where the game's normalcy ends. It is it's somewhere between kind of a bullet hell and just a Gradius type thing, but I'd say it qualifies as bullet hell a little bit. But anyways. So, trying to describe the rest of this, the story is told in, I'm going to say, not great English. This is a South American developer, Chilean, I believe. And, you know, I'm actually getting really impressed with what we're seeing from South America that's been coming up through the Switch. You know, just as an aside, I'm really appreciating what, you know, the quirkiness and, like, the quality sprite art and music that's been going into these things. So anywho's, the story is basically that, you know, there's alien insects attacking, and your team, or I guess three teams of heroes, has to go and stop them, and they somehow have possession of this, like, ship that I guess was your friend and is now your enemy. Whatever. So The point of it all is that your team is made up of, I guess, a cyborg ape that has been, like, rebuilt at some point in the intro story. A gerbil scientist named Mr. Cheeks. And
nice.
a generic anime girl named X3chan. And there's each of them are in, like, these groupings from which you can choose, you know, you can choose which team your character is from, and then from there you choose the five characters that are on that team. And those, so what those are is that, you know, you have your team that does, more damage than others. And so, not only are they, you know, damage oriented characters, but also when they have, filled up a certain gauge by shooting, you know, enough enemies, then it throws up that, you know, screen clearing bomb thing, kind of on a timer. And then there's a team that's more defensive, so when their gauge goes up, they get a shield. And then this other one, it says it just splits it, so I don't know. I didn't quite get what was going on there. It just seemed like it was another screen clearing bomb to me, but yeah, each team has five characters in it, so there's like 15 characters to choose from in this game, and each one has its own set of stats that determine things like speed and how far the bullets that they shoot spread out, because some of them stagger, some of them are more straight. Some of the bullets are larger, and, you know, just different things. Like, I went through, and each character just definitely seemed, like, different from, you know, the others, but they all, of course, have that one tiny dot in the center that represents the actual hitbox. So while you're actually controlling these really big sprites, some of them are, like, unwieldy, and, it ultimately comes down to it's that one dot, and you can always see it, so it ends up being, like, just a chance to show off the quirkiness in the art, and man, what quirkiness. Like I said, you got, you know, your Mr. Cheeks and your robot ape and your anime girl. You've got a couple other anime girls, some anime boys. Then you've got things like the severed head of a junkyard dog that shoots eyeballs.
Why not, right?
Yeah. You have, of course, you have a cat, the Iron Cat, and he shoots fish. you have a friggin' panda. You have a... I think his name is Weirdobot, where it's just like this robot that shoots, like, I forget what he shoots, but it's just like this, I don't know. It's a weird robot, and it does weird robot things. There's another robot that throws kitchen knives. So, like, there's just all kinds of, like, weird ass characters. And, like, yeah, you go through the actual levels, and they do have, like, these really nice elaborate animations going on in the background, lots of detail. you know, you start off in a bedroom and you can see like all these little things hidden around that are references to either this game or just other little references. And then, you know, there's like this weirdo, like, robot octopus that like lives in this room, and he's part of the story somehow. We don't really know why, because like I said, the whole thing is a little incomprehensible. But all that to say, like, the actual enemies are really interesting looking little, like, kind of cartoon insects and other things. Weirdly, they kind of just throw in like actual broad line cartoon style sprites, and then like the smoother, more realistic rendered looking sprites. They all look like either Super Nintendo or Game Boy Color, and they're just all kind of mixed in together. And then, like I said, some of them are really elaborately animated, so there's a big mix of art styles going on here. And the bosses are really big and like very interesting looking, usually insect themed. You know, there's worms and stuff like that. There's this one, like, weird-ass, like, worm ship, but it's designed to look like the Steamboat Willie boat, complete with, like, a little Mickey Mouse-like worm doing a little butt jiggle and whistling thing.
Nice.
So I feel like they're kind of, they're trying to bite a little bit of Cuphead there, too. So, but yeah, like, it's just one of those things that really, it kind of takes you back to like when shmups were absolutely bizarre, when you had like Parodius and Sexy Parodius and like Choaniki and you know, Aero Fighters, things like that, where you had a flying dolphin.
Yeah.
It's very much like that. But it does definitely have that indie touch. That is to say, it does have this whole, it just has this kind of completely unrestricted by any kind of sense. And then all this to say that the game as a shmup is actually very well done. I found the bullet patterns to be very good, not overly elaborate. You know, this is not a Rolling Gunner. Like I said, Rolling Gunner really went above and beyond. But this is definitely there with any kind of like indie shmup that you could play. And I think it has limited continues. I definitely got a permanent game over at the final boss. But that might just be a thing where you like get free continues until the final boss. And then if you lose the final boss, you know, that some games do that. Cause I feel like I got a lot of game overs before I got there. Because for sure, this game does get challenging in parts, even if you're on the easy, butterfly mode.
mode. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's like little butterfly or something like that. It says in parentheses next to easy mode, and the normal is El Macho.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, as it stands, $10 on QYO Blaster. What do you think of it?
Was it $10? I said $8.99.
I said $8.99 at the beginning, but my notes were wrong. I double checked the eShop, and it's $9.99.
Okay.
So I don't know if I had outdated information or what, but it is $9.99.
Might have been a pre-release price. They do that sometimes. Awesome. Okay, either way, $9, $10, whatever. If you're a shmup fan, this is a worthy addition to your collection for sure. It's hardly ever really that a shoot 'em up comes along that's just this off the wall and bizarre. For that reason, I found myself, you know, completely drawn to it. I would say it's, you know, mechanically maybe a little basic, but it's the one thing that I definitely never want in a shmup is for it to be boring or generic. And this is neither of those things. It is nice. It's a very cool game. You'll definitely, if not laugh, you'll at least scratch your head over the bizarreness. You know, this is like, this whole thing could have been just all drawn into somebody's notebook in high school. You know, it's just one of those kind of like letting your imagination run wild and then putting it in digital form, which of course I always support. And I think that this is a very good game overall. So yeah, go and experience this one for yourself.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. I like having shorter ones. It's better than having like a 10 game, 2.5 hour marathon.
Right. People are still awake at this point.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. If they're sleeping, thank you everyone for listening to us. Have a nice nap. and we'll see you next time.
Purple chicken, purple chicken, purple chicken, spaceman. Purple chicken, purple chicken, purple chicken, spaceman. Purple chicken, purple chicken, purple chicken, spaceman.
Purple chicken, purple chicken, purple chicken, spaceman. The purple chicken is flying through space, dodging obstacles in his way.
Spaceman.
He's shooting down the UFOs. He's gonna save the day.
Spaceman.
Yeah. When I first saw you flying through space, I knew you were no ordinary purple chicken.
Purple chicken, purple chicken, purple chicken, spaceman. Purple chicken, purple chicken, purple chicken, spaceman. Purple chicken, purple chicken, purple chicken, spaceman.
Desert.